With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect for breakfast. Like, buy a sausage burrito and add a sausage McMuffin for a dollar. Get more than you expect with new McValue at McDonald's.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
5 games unbeaten is the positive way to look at the last week, but after an 8-0 thumping of Salford City and being 2-0 up at Brentford with around 8 minutes plus stoppage time remaining, Manchester City should probably have made it 4 wins in a row instead of 3 wins and a draw. But perhaps the performance in West London showed encouraging signs, even if the result didn't. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon Podcast, where we'll review those 2 games, plus we'll preview what's to come, as it's looking like a sticky few weeks on the fixture list. It starts with Ipswich at Portman Road, and we'll hear all about their season so far as we speak to Rich from the Suffolk Crunch, and we'll get insight into PSG from Ed from PSG Talk, as City look to cling on to that top 24 spot to qualify for the knockout phase of the Champions League. We also had the sad news this week that the former City captain and manager Tony Book passed away. We'll discuss his legacy at the club, and we'll hear the interview that we did with him on the podcast all the way back in 2011, discussing his many successes at Main Road. I'm David Mooney, and for this week's show I'm joined by City fan Andy McNabb.
Hi David.
And the football historian, Dr. Gary James.
Thanks, David.
Let's start, chaps, with a bit of a silly question, because City keep throwing away leads at the moment. So I want to know, have you ever thrown something away that you wished you hadn't? Gary, I'm looking at you, because you must have, all the years of research that you've done, you must have gone, oh, I wish I'd never got rid of that.
I didn't exactly throw it away. I lost it with a computer error. But the very first, chapter of the Joe Mercer biography I did, I lost. It got damaged, and I wrote the first chapter, what became the first chapter, last, and it was never as good. The one that went was always better, and it still irks me today. It still really gets me today.
Yeah. Andy, there must be memorabilia, stuff like that, match day programmes, any match day programmes, things like that you've got rid of that you think you wish you hadn't?
No, I've still got my 76. I mean, to be honest, I didn't collect loads of programmes. It wasn't for me that, really, back in the day. But I've still got my 76 final one that I went to. That's still tucked away, away safely. The only thing I've got that I really remember was my wife threw away a football shirt. Mm. And it was actually a West Ham shirt, believe it or not. So it was Stuart Pearce's West Ham shirt from what was supposed to be his last season, but then he came to City, if you remember. But Stuart Pearce was, back in the day, was one of my favourite players. And one of my mates used to play for City, and he was playing against him. And I said to him, he was called, Jeff Whitley. Mm. So I said to Jeff, listen, Jeff, will you get a Pearce shirt for us? I never asked him for anything, ever, off time I knew him. And he said, yeah, of course he will, Andy, no problem. Why do you want Stuart Pearce's shirt? Because he wasn't of that era. He was a little bit younger than that. So
you were left back yourself?
No, I was a right back.
doesn't make any sense at all, yeah.
No, it's just the fact that I was similar in style, if you see what I mean. I think that's what it was. I was a tough tackling fullback, and all this and the other. And he played for England. Anyway, Jeff gets it me, and I didn't do anything more than put it in a drawer, and I thought, one day I'll get it signed. And then we were moving house, and it was, what it's like, it's chaotic and everything's moving out. And we were moving some furniture, was going to the skip because it's quite old and all that. So I said, right, get to the new house. And I said, did you clear the bottom drawer? She's like, no, it's gone. I thought you cleared it. I was like, no. I haven't. She was like, why? What was in it? So I said, my Stuart Pearce shirt. And she's like, right, okay. And so that's the only thing that my wife threw away inadvertently. Yeah.
But nothing you've accidentally chucked away that you shouldn't have done. I always think I always regret when I was a kid and when I was younger, I used to religiously record match of the day whether City had won or lost. Yeah. And I'd save them I had a DVD burner, so I'd save them to disc. But the one thing I never saved was any of the post-match interviews. And now, as a podcaster, and every time I want to go back and go, oh, that really obscure thing that happened in a game in 2004, you can't just find it on the internet sometimes. Sometimes you get, like, the only way to find it is off, you know, VHS that somebody's recorded. And I just wish I'd kept the interviews when I'd saved all that. I've got all the highlights on discs that I've burnt in various places. Makes me sound like a right sad act, I know. but none of the interviews, so I can never use them. But, you know, we soldier on. Let's talk about the game then, where City did throw away that two-goal lead. Because, Andy, I'm wondering, leaving the result aside, where do you think that performance at Brentford ranks amongst recent displays? Because it felt to me like it was improved.
Yeah, absolutely. It was by far one of our best performances of the season. And a couple of the friends that I've spoken to, they believe it was the best performance of the season. As far as total the control that we had and the fitness of the players looked a little bit fitter. Kevin De Bruyne certainly looks fitter, as fit as I've seen him for 6 months, the way he's going around the pitch. So I think it's right up there. Like I said, the result's not great, but the performance, I think, was... there was green shoots, definitely. So.
Yeah, and Gary, when you think of kind of what you want from City this season now... I mean, results almost don't matter at this stage because they're not really in a title race anymore. They'll probably get the points to be, you know, in and around the Champions League places. So it's kind of performances that matter now, is it?
I think so, yeah, to some extent. I mean, obviously we can't let ourselves drift away, but, you know, picking up a point isn't the end of the world, is it? It's better than not picking up any points. I think there were some positives from it, certainly. The only doubt, and I really don't want to put a negative in this, is that when we do concede, it just feels, and maybe it's us as fans, it may not even be the players, but it does feel as if we do all expect that second goal or third goal or whatever it may be. It does feel that. So I do worry about that. But no, as far as the season goes, let's give it our best shot. Aim for a top four finish, and you never know. We know our football seasons can change. Yes, we're not going to win the title. That's not going to happen. But you just never know how things could go yet.
Yeah, after four in a row as well, you kind of go, you know, it's all right to have a season off, I guess. Maybe it's fine for it to be somebody else's turn for a year.
And the other really big thing, and this has been a bit of a bugbear of mine over the last few years, is that how many times have we been told, Premier League, it's a one-horse race, it's over, City have ruined football, blah, blah, blah. And this is a perfect example of how the Premier League is such a tough league. We know how Jurgen Klopp got praised so much for winning one title and coming close to winning the Premier League. Pep Guardiola has managed that team to four consecutive titles. They're still in with a chance of a top four finish this season. Who knows where they could finish? It makes the last 4 years and before that so much more remarkable, really. Mm. So much more significant. Those successes, I would like everyone who sort of said, oh, it's over, it's a one-horse race, I'd like them all to now say, actually, that team that won four titles in a row is even more special than we thought it was. Because that's the extraordinary
thing. You'll never get that.
No, that's true, yeah. Yeah. I'm still looking for Joe Mercer chapter, so I'll never get that.
Andy, there's City seemed a bit more direct, I thought. I thought in many ways in that Brentford game, it was almost they'd gone, Brentford are going to press us, so we're going to go high to Haaland and get him to flick it into the space.
Yeah.
Guardiola seemed to lean into playing on the transition a bit more than he would normally. It made it more exciting. I mean, City were not very clinical in that game, but it made it more open and more exciting, I guess. Were they more dangerous?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I think there's been an argument for, you know, among some City fans as well recently, by the way, in my hearing, of City still being now, you know, it's becoming boring watching us just pass the ball, or, you know, just pass the ball. And we all know why we do it, and we all know what we're trying to achieve by doing it, is that, you know, that possession football, trying to find that one little pass through the lines that can create something, and be patient. And there's some people who say, oh, you know, it's getting a bit boring now and teams just sit in and everything else. So when you get chaos like we got on Tuesday, and it is, and it was a bit chaotic, but it's fun, it's exciting, but you do risk conceding more. That's just a fact of life. That comes with that process. You know, if you don't have the ball as much, then you're gonna create opportunities for the opposition, and they're going to create goals. And, you know, with the return of City-itis at the moment, you know, that that feeling that it's all going to go wrong again at some stage, you know, typical City has returned once again. Then we just, you know, we have to accept that a little bit. I think the key thing for me watching it was Kovacic's running through the lines with the ball. Now, we know he's good at that, but he doesn't. But we normally have Rodri behind him, and he's a number eight who comes through and everything else, and that's fine. But the fact that Pep allowed him to do that on Tuesday signified exactly what you're talking about there to me. Was the fact that it wasn't.
We're prepared to leave that massive open space behind him, but yeah.
And we'll score more than you, basically. And because at Brentford, you know you're not going to outrun them. You're never going to outrun them. They're always going to be there to the end. It's a difficult place to go, even when we've been absolutely at the top of our level. We've always struggled there to really get a grip of the game because of the way the Brentford play, and they're brilliant at it. So it's actually, to me, it was a good result and performance. I would have took a draw before I got there, but the disappointment comes that you're 2-0 down, 2-0 up.
Yeah,
and you throw away, and that's always a disappointment. But apart from that, if you'd have said to me, "We'll play really well, you know, we'll create loads of chances, it'll be a great game, you'll get a 2-2 draw before it started," I'd have took that all day long.
Yeah, and we can't forget they're not too far behind us in terms of league position, are they? And you know, they did the double overs 2 years ago, so they're no mugs. Really, are they?
Not at all.
And Gary, Phil Foden, just a word on him, because obviously scored both of City's goals. He likes Brentford. As Richard Burns pointed out in our WhatsApp group, maybe he doesn't like Brentford. That's why he keeps scoring against them. But he's got 7 goals against Brentford in 7 games, which is the best ratio that he's got against a particular team. But he's actually scored more against one other team. I bet you don't know who it is.
Oh, God, I should have checked this before I came on. Go on, what was it? Who
was it? He scored 8 in 11 against Brighton. But yeah, we all feel like, because it's now a 1-to-1 ratio with his games against Brentford, we all feel like, oh, Brentford, Foden will score. That's just how it is. But Brighton, Foden will score, yeah.
We both start with BR as well, don't we, Brighton and Brentford? So, you know, maybe he's got to think about that. I don't know.
I've literally tried to think of any other place in the UK that had BR but couldn't do it in that time. So,
Bradford.
Yeah, we'll have to wait for them to come back up.
That's when we get relegated. I think he's been the heartbeat of the team for me for a few weeks. Well, for, you know, over the last, I don't want to keep talking about the negatives, but if you think about how things have been recently, you sort of tend to look at the older players to get you out of those sort of problems. And that's unfortunately where some of our older players haven't necessarily been able to do that. But in Phil Foden, because of his experience at such a young age, to me, he's been that heartbeat. He's been the one who's sort of, there's been something about him, even when we've had those defeats, there's been something about him that I just think has kept it going. And it may well be something as bizarre as the fact that he is a City fan. Mm. And maybe somewhere in his family DNA, he knows a bit about our history. And maybe, just maybe, this is his perfect moment, if you like. this is the time when he becomes that sort of extra player, that extra dependable man, the one who's going to lift you out of the mess. Mm.
He was too young for the original typical City, so he's had to wait for it to come back to go for it again. He's created his own. And he's putting a run of appearances together now, which is much better than a few months back. So I said it recently to friends. He's low key suddenly kind of finding his form again and playing his way into this season, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I thought last season was epic for him, wasn't it? He was superb. The last 6 months of last season, he was unbelievable. I think that started at the Everton game, Everton away on Boxing Day. From there on, he sort of hit the straps, really. And I think it was always difficult for him to start this season and do the same again, because it's difficult for a really experienced 28, 29-year-old to do that. But for him, he's still only young. He's a young man still. And he's obviously been ill, he's had difficulties, and he's got over those. But he is slowly coming back again. And it's nice to see. It really is. His talent's undeniable.
He's 24, but he feels like he's like 28, 29, doesn't he? How involved he's been for so long, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Kevin was he 23, 24 when he came to us?
Hmm.
So the best years should be coming along now. you know, the time when he's gone and he's, you know, he's got everything under his belt. He's got his titles. He's got the appearances. He's got the gravitas now as a player. You know, he's player of the year and everything else. So, you know, hopefully the next 3, 4, 5 years, you know, he starts getting a grip of being the main man at Manchester City for the, you know, for us really, you know, for himself over the next few years, hopefully.
And that opening goal against Brentford, it was a bit Haaland-esque, if you like, wasn't it? Because, you know, De Bruyne crosses it, but he sort of leaps and then gets it on his leg in the sort of manner that Haaland would do. And that, for me, just shows that there's a bit of a confidence there that perhaps the rest of the team, I hate saying this, but perhaps some of the others in the team hadn't had that confidence recently. And he's got that. And so that just adds to it. And I do think that, obviously, we've seen so much from him over the last few years, but I can't wait for the next few years. It's going to be fantastic. Yeah,
I'd never realised, Andy, when you said there about the age De Bruyne was when he arrived at City and what De Bruyne has achieved, and I kind of feel like Foden's already an old head. He really isn't. He's got so much of much of that ahead of him. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
There's so much he can learn still, you know, and as long as you've got that open mind to learn, you know, he can crack on. And he can be, I mean, he should be our greatest ever player by the time he retires, without a shadow of a doubt. He should have the most appearances. He should have, you know, the most goals, the most assists. You know, he should be, you know, if he stays with us, which we all hope he does, and performs like he can perform for till he's 34, 35, his numbers will be ridiculous. I'm not sure Gary will be able to count that.
it's one of those things, you know, people, when players like, and I'm not saying this lightly, but when players like Messi or Ronaldo were that sort of age, you know, they'd achieved an awful lot. And you knew they were going to go on and continue to do that so long as things worked out. And that's the way it is with Foden. And I guess, you know, that's how it was with Colin Bell to some extent. You know, we feel that this is a hugely talented player. And so long as injuries and all the rest of it stay away, then I think it's going to be great.
Yeah. He'll certainly beating Alan Oakes' experience record, won't he?
I think the only thing that would stop that, I suppose, is just that there's less games in the league, but we are playing more games in Europe. So I don't know.
Swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's turn our attention to the Salford game, because there were some young faces in there that I want to talk about that did impress. I mean, we'll start with James McAtee, who's not necessarily a young face, but he got his first Etihad goal, quickly followed by his first Etihad hat-trick. Gary, what did you make of him? Because he's been a bit underused, I think some fans would say, this season.
Yeah, and it's difficult because when, you know, it's one of our own, if you like, when it's one of your local lads and that, you want them to play, and you want to give them opportunities, especially when things aren't going the way they should be going. It's a funny one, actually, because I took a weird pleasure from the game the other night, because my history piece
because the class in 92 had to sit and watch it. Is that what it was?
that's part of it. But my history piece in the programme is supposed to be a photograph from a few years back and a story connected with that, connected with the team that we're playing. Well, we've never played Salford competitively. So I was thinking, oh, do I just do something lazy and pick, I don't know, Gary Neville and something about going past it? Who knows, right? But my wife said to me, why don't you just do something on McAtee? He was born in Salford, wasn't it? So in the end, the photographs from the Leicester game, it was, wasn't it, right? And a small piece about McAtee. So when he scores and his hat trick and everything, I'm thinking, yes, perfect.
I've nailed it.
For the first time, my history piece is about the last couple of games. You know, it's not years ago. But no, I loved the way he celebrated as well. That first goal, you could see the celebration. And I don't know if being from Salford made it mean any more or what, or was it just the fact that it's his first Etihad goal? I don't know. But I love to see that. I love to see that he really enjoyed that moment. And, you know, funnily enough, the celebration after his second goal, he seemed to pause for a second. I do wonder if he thought that for some reason it might be, I don't know, disallowed, offside, who knows what. But I do, I'd love to see him play every week, of course, but that's just because he's one of our lads, you know, and that's what I'd love to see. But clearly he's not going to, is he?
How involved could he be for the remainder of the season, Andy? Because there is obviously a balance here where Guardiola I suspect doesn't trust him as much as fans think he should trust him. And I mean, we saw at Brentford again, he maybe could have come on a bit sooner, maybe didn't have to be for Foden, that sort of thing.
I think that the issue with that James has got is that I actually believe, and I think it showed the fact that when he scored the hat-trick, his best position is probably in those two roles that Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden take, where they switch really between the wing, the right wing, and the number 10 role. And they rotate round, if you notice, Kevin and Phil on that side, which, you know, so... And I think he'd probably take one of those two roles, really. But you've got Phil Foden and Kevin De Bruyne there. And Kevin needed games to get his fitness back, to get to where he needs to be. And he's so important for us. I mean, that cross for Phil's goal against Brentford was ridiculous. A typical Kevin De Bruyne cross. Well, the thing that I really liked about him was how late he arrives in the box. I think that's actually a gift that you can't teach. I think, the reading of the game, where he, you know, having... all three of his goals were just well-timed runs into the box, which I don't think Gundo had that, didn't he? Gundo and used to have that, you know.
And I think when he could run.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's a gift. But where does he play? You're right. And I think, you know, when you said, could he come on early against Brentford? I don't know who for, if I'm being honest. I mean, I thought when I was watching it, I think the substitute I was expecting, if I'm being honest, 2-0 up away at Brentford, was Grealish to come over and to play on the left so we can retain the ball and rotate it and indicate those little free fouls and get free kicks and slow the game down and break it up. And I thought he was perfect for that. And that didn't happen. The fact that James actually came on to me, James McAtee came on, I was a bit shocked at that. I thought, this is Grealish's time, really, if I'm being honest. Because in the past, it's always been Grealish time when he's been on the bench, is to bring him on and slow the game down, break it up and all that. So, and obviously, he deserved to play. He deserved to come on. There's no doubt about that. But I think Kevin was probably having his best game for a long, long time. I think Phil was obviously played well, but remember, he's been ill. He's been, you know, he's not played a lot of games and they probably want to be careful with him. So that was probably the swap to make, if you see what I mean. But yeah, I don't know where he would have gone because Phil was playing well, Kevin was playing really well, and like I said, I was still shocked that was the actual. Maybe Savinho could have come off for Grealish was the substitute, as well as McAtee coming on. But I don't know.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
The other youngsters as well, Gary. I mean, Jermaine Simpson-Pusey, we've seen a bit already this season when he's been forced to come in for the first team. Weirdly, got his first win in the senior City team at his sixth attempt. It's not many players that have that record these days. And Divine Mbabana as well scored. Looked pretty good, but probably won't see him again for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a tapping goal, wasn't it? But they all count, so all that count, was nice to see. They all count. Yeah, I think... It depends a lot on Europe and progression of the FA Cup and fixture congestion and all that, doesn't it? Whether there's going to be many opportunities. I think once we it's difficult saying this, isn't it? But once we do get into a rhythm where we're winning games and that, then we're probably going to try and stick to our preferred players all the way through, and the kids are more likely to you know, play the odd cup tie maybe, depending on how it goes, or the last few minutes of a game here and there. But yeah, we'll see. I think the good thing is we have got players who've been coming through in the last few years, and I know, you know, when Pep was talking about McAtee, he's sort of talking about McAtee, and went on about Cole Palmer and all the others of that generation, if you like. And I think we've got another generation that are just below that now, and they're making their odd appearances. And yeah, I think it's good experience. I'd like to see him in a winning team, you know, more often, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and let's not forget Nico O'Reilly, Andy, who looked pretty solid at left back.
Yeah, I thought he looked really good. He was actually my man of the match, if you take away the hat trick from McAtee. I used to coach years ago, you know, like, I always used to say, if somebody scores a hat trick, I'll give the man of the match to somebody else, because, you know, the lads can go to school. There's two lads going to school on a Monday then with, you know, something to talk about. But it's also because there's a lot of work goes into somebody scoring a hat trick. Mm. You know, yeah. You might have a really good defender. You might have somebody who's assisted those goals or whatever, you know. And I think, to me, Nico looked the best of the bunch, really, if I'm being honest. I thought they all played really well. I thought, you know, I won't go on it too much, but Mbama looked like he looked comfortable and he enjoyed the physical battles that he was doing. He's got a great touch, looked great. I think Nico looked like his reading of the game at left back, and to play a fullback, fullback, I know because I played there, is one of the easy positions on the pitch, to be honest with you. But it's also you've got to stop everything. You can't let crosses coming in and everything else. You've got to look at your line. And that's the hardest bit when you're a young player who's never played that back line, is looking across your line, making sure you're keeping in line with your centre-halves and your distances and everything else. It's not just playing football. There's a technical bits in it. And I thought he was outstanding there. I really did. I thought he was strong. His pace was really good. He drove with the ball through the lines and got a great goal as well. So, you know, I was really impressed with him. He's probably, like I said, overall, he's the one who impressed me the most.
And that goal, he looked confident as well with that.
Yeah.
Didn't he? You know, the football. Goal, he looked, I mean, so confident. Yeah.
I mean, fullbacks weren't as good at football in my day than they are now. That's the thing. We're all very talented players now.
Yeah. The sad thing is, Andy, is I'm 37 and I can say goalkeepers weren't as good at football in my day as well. So it comes for the best of us. Let's move on, because this week we had the sad news that City legend Tony Book has died at the age of 90. He joined City as a player in 1966 and went on to captain the club, leading them to the league title in 1968, the FA Cup in 1969, and the League Cup and European Cup Winners' Cup in 1970. Then, as City manager, he was in charge when the team won the League Cup again in 1976. In the years that followed, he remained a vital part of the club's staff, including being a huge figure in the youth setup at Main Road as well. We spoke to him on the podcast back in May 2011. We'll talk about his legacy shortly, but first we're going to hear that interview all over again right now.
When I left school, David, you know, I always wanted to be a footballer. And, you know, I went from, you know, playing schoolboy football into youth football, which you usually do. And as I say, tried to make my way that way. And I was a little inside forward in them days. And, you know, just played at a consistent level, you know, in where I lived in the West Country, you know, in the Western League. And I played for a little team outside of Bath, where I came from, which was called Peasedown Miners Warfare, and that's where I played there. And as I say, I was a little inside forward, and then I went into the army, and as I say, started playing. You know, in them days, it was good to be in the army if you were a footballer, because in them days, as I say, they used to have to play six amateurs amongst five professionals in each team. You know, so as an amateur as I was then, you know, I got a chance. But again, being in the army, you've done what you were told. And all of a sudden, for some reason, you know, the sergeant that was in charge, he said, I want you to go and play at right back. And that's how it started, as being a right back, David. You know, just being told to go and play there in the army. And from there, I just improved, you know, and I went to Chelsea for trials while I was in the army, through, you know, one or two other players, that professionals that were at where I was, you know, where I was camped out, Frank Blunston and Trevor Chamberlain and them. And as I say, went to Chelsea, played a few games for them. And when I left the army, I had a letter from them saying they didn't think I was going to be good enough to play at full-time professional level. So I just went back to playing for my own town team, Bath. And somebody came into my life when I was 30, Malcolm Allison, and gave me a chance. And as I say, from playing for my own town team, Bath City, at 30 years of age, I go down to Plymouth Argyle for a couple of seasons. Had a couple of seasons down there under Malcolm Allison. Well, he was just there for the one season. And he came up here to be assistant to Joe Mercer with Manchester City. And all of a sudden, you know, they're in for me and I get another chance to come and play First Division football, something that I always wanted to do at 32 years of age.
Well, I heard that Plymouth thought they weren't signing a 30-year-old.
That's right. They thought they was signing a 28-year-old, David, because Malcolm, in his wisdom, you know, he said, "Tony, I've told the directors that you're 28," and he said, "Is there anything we can do to sort that out?" And luckily, very luckily, you know, the old, you know, your mum used to keep your birth certificate, and she had it folded, and in the fold line, you know, was the 1934, like, you know, so it was quite easy to say, you know, it was 36 rather than 34.
And then you soon became City captain. How did that feel all of a sudden to be, you know, from one minute you're playing for Bath City and the next minute you're captaining Man City?
Yeah, it was, as I say, I came in and I think it was because, you know, the age I was, David, you know, that, you know, as I say, Malcolm had known me as a captain of Bath, you know, I'd captained down at Plymouth as well, like, you know, and you know, when I've come in, Johnny Crossan was here and he was captain. And after, you know, he was transferred and all of a sudden it came down to me. And I think, again, basically a lot of it was to do because of the age I was and the experience that I'd had, not through, you know, full-time professional, but the experience I'd had through part-time professional, you know, as being a part-time professional footballer, and then, as I say, just having the 2 years full-time, I think, you know, they just went for the experience because there was a lot of young lads that had come through the system, you know, likes of Glenn Pardo, Alan Oakes, Mike Doyle, Harry Dowd, Tommy Booth, you know, Youngie. There was a lot of young lads that had come through the ranks, and, you know, as I say, I was, like, age-wise, I was the most experienced. So I think they went for that, and that's how I became captain.
What do you remember of that team that you played in and was so successful with?
Well, it was amazing, David, you know, that we came together. And, you know, they looked at it, Joe Mercer and Malcolm, and, you know, decided what they needed, you know, and they went out and got the likes of Mike Somerby, Colin Bell, Francis Lee, myself, Tony Coleman, and George Eslop, you know, five or six of us, and, you know, came in, and as I say, with the nucleus of the young lads, you know, that had come through the ranks, you know, came together, and as I say, came together as a team and just really, you know, bonded together, and, you know, we had some great times together, and it was amazing. You know, we used to be away, David, to maybe every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, they used to take us away either over to Southport or to Blackpool. After games, we'd played at Main Road and we'd go there for weekends. And as I say, we used to get together on a Saturday night and have a few drinks and have a good laugh. And, you know, next morning we were up and out on the beach doing some work, you know, running and, you know, and and it was a great time to be here because Malcolm Allison, you know, who was the coach, first time around, he was absolutely magnificent. You know, got us together and kept us together, and, you know, worked us. You know, we'd done some tremendous work, you know, especially on the running track and that. And as I say, we used to go out and work hard, play hard, but certainly go out and enjoy ourselves, you know, after we'd played.
What did Malcolm and Joe bring to City?
Well, Joe, as I say, he brought his experience of, you know, having you know, played at top level and managed at top level. He wasn't a well man when he first came. You know, he'd had a problem with his health. But after, you know, after the first couple of years, you know, he'd come through it. But as I say, Malcolm, you know, he was the coach. But Joe was a brilliant PR man. You know, he used to go out and spread the gospel about Manchester City. And as I say, Malcolm used to do all the coaching and, you know, all the work on the training ground and, you know, brought us all together and made us realise, you know, that, you know, we're a useful side. And, yeah, I remember, you know, we'd won the championship and I went out with an injury, David. I think it was a season after I'd had an Achilles tendon injury where I was struggling, you know, because of my age. You know, they weren't prepared to operate or anything. And Malcolm Allison tells a story to Tommy Booth, you know. Tommy was he was only a young lad who'd just got in the team and started doing well, like, you know. And he said to Tommy, because we'd been struggling the season after we'd won the championship, and as I say, I'd been out, you know, for all the first part of the season. I never came back to the January. And Tommy was speaking to Malcolm one day and he said, you know, I'm a little bit concerned, Tommy said, about, you know, the way things are going at the moment. Malcolm said, don't worry, he said, we've got Skip coming back after a long injury, he said, and he said, we'll go out and win the FA Cup this season when he gets back. And, you know, that's the type of confidence he had in people. And as I say, we went on, I'd come back and played my first game in the January. We'd played up at Newcastle and got a draw. And brought them back to Main Road and won that one and went on to win the FA Cup that year, David. And as I say, that's how, you know, how brilliant he was about, you know, what he thought about his players.
Now, if I look down at your list of achievements as a City player and captain as well, so I'd say you were trophies wise City's most successful captain. What was that like?
It was amazing, David. You know, because it came so quick after I'd been here. And, you know, I mean, I had a job to make my way up the steps at Wembley, you know, to go and pick up the trophy. But when I got there, it was just an amazing feeling, like, you know, just to, you know, be presented with that trophy and, you know, to show it to the fans. It just takes your breath away. And then when you travel back the day after and, you know, you get off the train at Wimslow and, you know, get on an open deck coach and drive, you know, from Wimslow right down through past the you know, Wimslow Road and down past the old ground and that, and see the, you know, thousands and thousands of Blue fans out there with the scarves and, you know, with their kids and everything. And it's just an amazing feeling when you win a trophy to, as I say, to come back to this city of ours and show the trophies off.
Now, how did you make the transition from player to manager? How was that difficult for you?
It was difficult, David. Yeah, it was difficult because, you know, I'd been playing with them and, you know, as I say, you know, we were a tight group of players who, you know, got on great with each other. But I had the most difficult job to do, David, because I had to break up, you know, that side. You know, they were beginning to get a little bit older and that, you know, and I had to try and change it around and, you know, get success as well, you know, which was very, very difficult. As I say, having to, you know, go and speak to players and, you know, saying, you know, well, I'm going to change it and, you know, I've got to be prepared to let you go now. And, you know, the likes of Mike and Franny and Alan Oakes and them people, you know, and it was a very, very difficult job. But, you know, as I say, things had to be done, and I tried to do them to the best of my ability, and, you know, didn't do too badly. We, you know, we finished up runners up to Liverpool, you know, losing the championship by a point. You know, won the League Cup, took them into Europe. You know, four times out of the 5 years I was manager. So you know, it was difficult, but I enjoyed doing it. Yeah, it was great. It was great, another great period in my career.
Actually, I think it's a bit of an understatement to say you did okay, because, as I say, you were first person to win the League Cup and as a player and a manager.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that like as an achievement?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I look back, you know, I've never given it a lot of thought, like, you know, but, you know, when I do look back and think of it, you know, that I was the first one to do that, you know, it's just a brilliant feeling, you know, because, you know, this... this club had done so much for me, given me a chance, and you know, I was just, you know, so happy, you know, to be able to, you know, do something to pay them back.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Tony Book speaking to us back in May 2011. I mean, the first thing that always strikes me, Gary, I imagine you both kind of, with the way you've been around the club, you both kind of interacted with Tony Book as well. But the thing that always strikes me is how much time he had for everybody. And like May 2011, we've been doing the podcast 2 years. Like we're not important now. We were even less important then. And he'd quite happily sit down and just chat, and that's the sort of person he was.
And that's really true, totally. And when you consider he'd been a captain at the highest level, winning European trophies, he'd been a manager winning trophies. You know, Tony was always a wonderful, wonderful ambassador beyond, you know, sort of the foot, being a manager and a player in that. And the last time I spoke to him was the former players' due, which was this season before Christmas. And you know, he's 90, and he was there with his daughter Tracy. And it was obvious that being there meant so much to him. He didn't want to let people down. He wanted to be there. He wanted to attend this function. Not for himself. You know, he doesn't need any glory or anything like that. It's not for him. It's for everybody else. And David White, I think it was either David White or Ian Brightwell, I can't remember which one now, told a story on the night about when they were sort of in the Central League as young players, you know, in reserves. And Tony Book was one of the sort of managers of the Central League team of reserves, you know, one of the coaches. And they were playing, as they used to do in those days, they were playing a team from Liverpool. I can't remember if it was the sort of Marine or whether it was South Liverpool or whatever, but basically tough Liverpool footballers, because the Central League wasn't just kids, it was people of all backgrounds, you know, it's basically first team who dropped out or whatever. And there's this one particular player who was giving our young lads a bit of a hard time. So what did Tony Book do? He suddenly, at the age of, he must have been 50, I'd guess, at the age of 50, he's already one of the named substitutes. He puts himself on, sorts that player out. I can't remember, I think it was Ian Brightwell's story, but it was either David White or Ian Brightwell. And I think that sort of says what kind of a man he was as well. You know, don't mess with my kids, I'll sort you out.
Yeah, he's not unafraid to go and right a wrong even at that older, that age. Yeah. Andy, what did Tony Book mean to Manchester City? Because obviously, I ran through in the introduction like his trophies that he won as a player and as a manager. But it's so much more than that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I jokingly said that we should call a new stand the bookend. You know, that new style of building, because it's an analogy of what he was to City. He's like, he's always been there, and he's always been the steadying hand. I think Gary knows far more about him than me because the work he's put in. But I do actually remember, I met him in 1990 when I used to play for Great Manchester Police in the Manchester League. And one of our pre-season friendlies was against Manchester City's A-team.
You weren't causing problems for some of the young lads, were you? And he didn't sub himself on and sort you out, did he?
No, not at all. No, he was a little bit older then. But no, I mean, the thing is, I think he brought them here. I mean, there was players like Martin Margeson was in nets, you know, Neil Lennon, Michael Hughes. Who else was playing? AD Mike was playing. And remember, these, by the way, all the players that he brought through that won the Youth Cup, the FA Youth Cup, he then brought those players through as well. He was there, you know, for years bringing these lads through from City's Academy. But these guys were playing against us. And the thing that I remember the most is, apart from being an utter gentleman, is we had a lad called Neil Aldridge who played for us as a left-back. And he was an unbelievably good footballer, this lad. But he just, you know, he'd left football and, you know, sort of like hadn't quite made it, and he'd gone into the police and everything else. And Tony coached him, and he remembered him. And we were sat chatting, the three of us were chatting, and he turned around to me and he said, Neil, one of the best left footers I've ever seen at the, you know, at City. And he was like, he still remembered him. He was really complimentary. He was such a genuinely nice guy. And that stuck with me. That's the first time I'd ever met him. And obviously, like, you know, from, I'd never met him when he was a player or anything like that. First time I met him. And I've met him quite a few times at City since then. And he was always the same, like Gary said. He's just a genuinely nice guy. He's obviously got a little bit of steel about him. You hear some of the young lads speaking about him as a coach. And he was a fatherly figure, but in every way. Like, he would give them the biggest bollockings they've ever had in their life if they stepped out of line. But he'd also put an arm around them as well. And that's a special kind of person who can do both. You know, so many people speak so well of him, and rightly so.
Yeah. I'd have loved to have heard what one of those bollockings would have sounded like in his accent, Gary, because he never lost it. He never lost that accent.
No, it's funny, actually, because the Boys in Blue, you know, the song, BBC did an interview way back when we were recording that, and we played it when I did one of the film shows that I did. And he makes a comment saying about his accent there and then, saying that he's no good on the record because his accent's just not good enough for it. But yeah, I mean, what a wonderful accent. You know, but that's what working on a building site down in Devon does, or whatever, or, you know, Somerset, or whatever it was, yeah.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, and we're very sorry about that.
He crosses generations, doesn't he? And that's the thing, Andy, because there's the people who saw him as a player, there's the people who knew him as the manager, and then there's people who knew him as part of the youth setup and the backroom staff. But even in the years after, there's the people that even youngsters now knew him as a club ambassador, and like the fact that he's there just like consistently through City's history from the point he joined in the 60s to now, it just says a lot about him.
Yeah, I mean. You know, I don't think you get many people like Tony Book in football. And even, by the way, I'm not saying anymore. I mean, ever. Mm. I mean, that's the point I'm trying to raise. He was City through and through, loved the club, would do anything to help the club at whatever level. I mean, remember, we've been through some real bad times over those years. And he was a constant. And I remember... I mean, he was a successful manager, by the way, until Malcolm came back. And then, you know, I thought that was a big mistake, if I'm being honest. I mean, everybody was really happy that Malcolm Ellison was coming back. I remember it, you know, because he was a big character and everything else. But Tony Butt was the steadying hand at City. And he was somebody who everybody respected. And I think that mattered, really. You know, the players loved him. You know, they knew they could. You know, they knew they could rely on him, but he wasn't soft either. But he brought that through right through the club. You know, he expected everybody to be like him at City. I think
it's important as well what you've just said about him as a manager, because he won the League Cup, and we all talk about that. We finished second by a point to Liverpool, which at that time Liverpool were. Not quite as dominant as Pep's City, but they were a dominant team. And so missing the title by a point says a great deal. We'd got through to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup. Book was the manager. We got through to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup. And then they make that big mistake and bring back Malcolm Ellison. And if you look at the news reports from that time, if you read the papers, if you go back through it all and research it step by step, you can see that... Tony Book says the right things. He's a nice guy. He's a wonderful guy. He says the right things. But how on earth can the guy who was the captain actually be the manager over his former boss. He can't. It just isn't going to work. And so from the start, that relationship was never going to work in the way that it needed to. And I just think that if Malcolm Allison, even if Malcolm Allison had come back, say, during the summer, I think that UEFA Cup that year would have been ours. I think we would have won the UEFA Cup because we got through to the quarterfinal. We were not having a great time in the league, but in Europe, we were doing the business. And I think we would have won it. And then, of course, even if you've got through to the semi-finals of UEFA Cup or the final, that changes everything. That brings in the money to buy the players and blah, blah, blah. So I think Tony Book, prior to perhaps Mancini in the last, and Guardiola and Pellegrini in that, Tony Book was probably certainly our greatest manager apart from Joe Mercer. Going back to, you know, it's unfair that we can't talk about Les McDowell because we were not around really, but you know, certainly Tony Book, it was Joe Mercer for me, Tony Book, and then our recent managers who have been given more funds than Tony Bucket was ever given. So yeah, it's.
And they also, Gary, there can't be many people. You probably might know if I'm wrong here, but there can't be many players that won trophies with one club and then managed the club and won trophies again.
And
you know what I mean.
And not to even play in the league until what age was he? 29 when he started playing for Plymouth and 31 when he came to City.
I think he was about 38 when he came to City. I'm joking.
There is that old story, isn't there? Which
the doctor birth certificate.
Malcolm Allison told me a version of it where, fortunately, the crease of the last digit was sort of, you know, the crease was on the last digit or whatever, and so it was easy to change.
They turned the four into a six because it was on the fold.
But the thing about that is that he had to actually sacrifice a lot to join City, because when he's playing down in at Bath, first of all, he's a part-timer, you know, he's got his brick laying and so on. And then he goes to Plymouth and, you know, that's local, it's fine, he can keep, you know. But coming up to Manchester, what a gamble to a team that's just got promoted at that age with his family and everything else.
Didn't he go to Toronto? Gary, didn't he go to Toronto? Did Alisson take him away for a short while?
He had a brief spell in Toronto when Alisson was there. That's true. But, you know, one of the funny things that happened, when I did Farewell to Main Road, the book about the history of Main Road, and when we did the book launch in 2003, we did it at the old museum, and we had a big screen up, and there was quite a few people talking on the night, and as people were talking, we just had some photographs of Main Road coming up on the screen. And one of the pictures that came up was the wall where it said Kippack Street the sign Kippack Street and then the wall. And Tony Book just happened to be doing the talking then. And then he stopped talking and he said, "I'm just admiring the pointing," because he was looking at the wall at the pointing.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. I mean, Gary, somebody else we should mention as well, Bobby Kennedy also passed away this week, another former City player. What did he mean to the club?
Bobby Kennedy was that strange period, really, sort of before Joe Mercer, and then he was part of that title-winning squad in 67-68, although he only made a small number of appearances, but he was part of that squad. And then, obviously, the club had gone to another level, and so he sort of that was the end basically for Bobby Kennedy. But when I interviewed him, it's about 20 years ago now, but I interviewed him and he was another really lovely guy. He was proud of his time at City. He knew it was a transition period and he was just so enthusiastic about being part of that team that started to do things, you know, the Mercer Allison team. He was so enthusiastic about being part of that. And I was really touched, actually, when I interviewed him, because I'd contacted him. It was a time when I was doing an interview with a foreign player every match programme. And so I was going down the list. And I was thinking, initially I was told, do all the guys who've won everything, if you like. And I was saying, well, a lot of them have the same sort of stories. So I wanted to do different people. And I just went down the list one day and thought, I wonder if I could find Bobby Kennedy. And I got in touch with him, and he was just so pleased that he was being interviewed by Manchester City. And it sort of put him back in touch with a former Players Association a little bit as well at the time. And so and that was nice. And then, unfortunately, I've not seen him for a few years, but the fact that he was finally awarded a Football League medal was really pleasing to him, and I think his family in those last few years. You know, it must be great that after all those years, a wrong has been corrected, if you like.
Yeah, for sure. Let's take a look now at the games that City have got coming up. We're going to start with this week's trip to Ipswich. We'll hear now from Rich from the Suffolk Crunch.
We've done as well as I think I've expected. Could we have had more points? Yeah, we could, because we've let, I think, four games we've let goals in, 90-plus. But I think that probably comes with the experience, you know. We're a little bit naive. And I think we've sort of changed the system. Since Newcastle, just before Christmas, we lost 4-0, and he's gone back to, now we're playing three centre-backs. We played quite open. You'll probably see when we come to yours, we were very open. We celebrated hard for about 2 minutes when we took the lead at the Etihad, and then it's probably the worst thing that we've done. It sort of woke you up, didn't it? And then within about, I think, 10 minutes, we were 3-1 down. But yeah,
I'm just wondering if you're cursing that result as well now, given the way that City's season's gone so far.
possibly, but look, I think like that was obviously our first away game for like what, over 20 years in the Premier League. So it was a case of I was literally right next to your fans, and we were going mad, and they're looking at us thinking, you know what's got to come next. So yeah, look, I think we've done well. We obviously now we're in the transfer window. We've made one signing. We've made Ben Godfrey. We're trying to get Jadon Philogene over the line. It seems a bit of a circus at the minute. It's been going on for over a week. We tried to get him in the summer, but Villa had the buyback. And we need another striker. But look, I'm quite happy where we are. We're well in with a shout of staying up. It's just a case of now Everton are changing to David Moyes. You're thinking, good appointment. I think, in my opinion, I think he's a good manager. Wolves have obviously, they've had that new manager bounce. I think we'd be better than Leicester and Southampton. Can we be better than one of them? Other, I think it's probably Everton and Wolves with us. I don't see really any other Palace of sort of, they'll have enough to get away. Can we be better than one other team? Look, we've given ourselves a shot, but it's going to be very, very hard, I think.
Yeah, if you could be better than Manchester United, that would be a real, real buzz around these parts. So that would be good. But no, I hear what you're saying. You mentioned strikers there. Obviously, Liam Delap is a massive connection between these two clubs. Is he going to come back to haunt us on at the weekend?
Well, obviously, we're recording this before we play Brighton tomorrow night, so hopefully he's going to be fit. But look, he's just been a breath of fresh air. I don't think anybody sort of had... Look, I've seen him play for Hull. I thought, yeah, he's decent when he signed. And a lot of people saying, yeah, quite a lot of money, 15 to 20 million. But I think that's the sort of average you're paying for these players from like your Premier League sort of academies and top end of the Championship. Look, he's been a breath of fresh air. He won't be with us next season, Dave. I don't think even if we stay up, I'll be very, very surprised. I think you can match, I think, if there's a bid comes in. I believe City have got first dibs. Would they go back in for him? I don't know. I think wherever he goes next, he needs to be picking the right club that he's going to play under the right manager. Look, McKenna's the right manager for him at the minute, I think, because he's playing every week and he's massively improved from the start of the season to now. And he's a bit of a throwback for me. You don't see many sort of number nines like him left. He's strong. He runs the channels. He don't mind having a fight with a defender. He'll probably stick one on one of the City players within the first 30 seconds. He likes to leave his calling card early on. And look, if you're a Town fan, you just have to enjoy watching him play. And I think, personally, when Tuchel picks his first England squad, he should be in it because he's young. He can, I'm not saying to play, but get him in there early and get him in there learning from like Harry Kane. Because if you watch Match of the Day and that, and Shearer and Danny Murphy and people like that, they say he's like the successor to Kane. Is that maybe a little bit too much at the minute? Maybe, but I'm going to pump his tyres because he's a Town player and he's got 8 goals, he's got 2 assists, and he's probably our best chance, if he can stay fit, of staying in this division. If he can get another, well, he's got 8 goals in the first half. If he got to 15, 16 goals and he had 4 or 5 assists, I think that'd be a great season for him, whatever happens. And look, we're going to make some big money on him, whatever happens.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Newcastle game and the change that Kieran McCann has put in since then of going to a back three. How's that changed you? How are you playing at the moment? What's form been like?
Well, I think if you look before that, we sort of played 4-2-3-1, which a lot of teams play now, that they all want to play that. Since we come from League One, then we obviously went through the Championship. And I like a manager who's got a philosophy and you've got to stick to it. But I think we were too open. If you look at some of them games where Leif Davis plays left back, but he's not left back and he leaves a lot of space in behind for that centre back. So you've got that now. Some people say it's still a four because, like, the right-sided centre back can drop into right back, but I think to give ourselves a chance, we have to be a little bit more difficult to beat. And we went to Arsenal just after Christmas, and I don't know if you watched it. It wasn't the greatest game if you're a neutral. We lost 1-0. We didn't have a lot of possession. But I think that was the game after Newcastle. And look, even though we lost, it was important to go there and not suffer another like 4 or 5-0 with Chelsea next. People thinking, blimey, look, you've got some tough fixtures. But then we went and beat Chelsea, you know, and we played very well that night. We stifled them. We made it hard for them to break us down. Should have won away at Fulham. You know, two really soft penalties they gave away. And that's another thing, Dave. It's like, it's decision-making in them crucial moments towards end of games. And obviously, Muric was in goal. Obviously, he played at the start of the season. He's been taken out because he'd made a few mistakes. And we've got Christian Walton in goal now. And it seems he's brought a little... I know he's only played, what, two league games. But he's brought a little bit of calmness. And I think... If you obviously had Muric at City, anybody who knows anything about him, I think he's a good goalkeeper, but I think he's prone to make the... He could be...
Eccentric, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, it's like Sunday. He played in the cup game against Bristol City and Bristol Rovers, and we were 3-0 up in the first half. They literally didn't go in our half, and he's almost given them a goal. He's had nothing to do, and he's passed the ball straight to their striker, and you're thinking, look, there's a good goalkeeper in there. He's playing at Premier League level, but... That's probably why he's at a club like Ipswich, you know, because if he was that good, he would still be playing at City. He'd still be at City and he'd be playing for a bigger club, but he probably won't get his place back now because Walton, look, he made 4 or 5 errors. Christian Walton now, he's got some rope, really. So it's his place to keep from now to the end of the season. Yeah, I think it's if you're playing behind the goalkeeper, you're not quite sure what he's going to do. I don't think that gives a lot of confidence across to the defence. Well, I think Walton brings that sort of that calmness and he's a bit more assured. I'm not saying he's a much better goalkeeper than Muric. You know, with his feet, he's not very good. We are actually playing a little bit longer. We did try and play out. And I think you've just got to be sensible. I think if you watch any highlights, Dave, at a weekend, you'll see it down the leagues. These keepers, they're trying to play out the back, but they're not good enough. So if you want to play out, all by all means, but do it in, you've got to pick your moments because it's like when we played you in that first game and you, we 1-0 up and then he makes two absolute howlers, Muric, didn't he? He's on the edge of the box, gets robbed. Then he comes literally out in the middle of nowhere and Haaland scores and you can't do that. It's hard enough to get points in the Premier League without just gifting teams goals.
Yeah. Let's touch on Portman Road because obviously you mentioned the Chelsea game there and obviously that was a game at Portman Road that you went on to win. How's your home form been? Because last time City went there in the Cup, they won quite handsomely, but the last time City went there in the league, they were relegated. So there's quite contrasting fortunes there, really.
Well, we've only won one league game. That was literally the last game of the year and we all turned up there thinking, blimey, Chelsea. We could go from, like, obviously May when we got promoted was the last home victory against Huddersfield, and we hadn't won. We played quite well. There's games there, your Villas, your Leicesters. There's quite a few games there that we probably should have had more points from. But this is what I'm saying, you know, making them mistakes in games towards end of games when you've been winning, you've just got to iron out them mistakes. Chelsea was for me, it's a free hit. It's like City on Sunday for any town fan. I don't think that's going to be the be-all and end-all of us staying into division. You know, Chelsea come down there and Cucurella was doing his usual tactics, diving on the floor. But we got amongst them and I don't think Chelsea... I don't know if they'd expected it, but I think they might have turned up and thinking, oh, Ipswich, you know, not very good, down the bottom of the league. You know, I'm not saying they took us for granted, but I think sometimes as a player, you might think, well, they're not very good. We just got to turn up tonight and we're going to get the job done. And I think we surprised them, and I think that's how we have to play. We have to play, like on Sunday, we'll have probably, 25% possession, and we've just got to be compact, and you've got to shut them spaces down. I know it's easy saying it sitting here, but at the minute, City are not in great form. You know, last night, they were 2-0 up late on in the game against Brentford. Brentford, a very good side at home, so that wasn't really a surprise, but I think we've got a small chance of getting something from the game. But for me, it's a bit of a free hit. And if we do come away with a defeat, we've always got an easier game the next Saturday when we go to Anfield. So there you go.
Well, let's put you on the spot because we've got the charity back coming up. What's your score prediction for this one? What will you say? How will it go?
I think last time when I was on, I think I said 3-1. And it was obviously 4-1. And we got away lightly that day because it was 3-1 after, 11 minutes? And I'm thinking, blimey, this could be a cricket score. I think City will win. I think it'd be a narrow. It might be I'll go for a 2-1. It's, for me, tomorrow night, Brighton at home. I know they're a good side. That's a game you need to target to win, I think, because it's a home game. City at home, it's more of a free hit. I know you're not in form, but look, you've got some brilliant players. And then, people going down there, you'll see Haaland, Foden obviously back on form, scored 2 last night. But for me, it's more about performance. If we go out there and we give a good performance and we're not good enough, fair enough. And that's probably what will happen. But we'll see what happens on Sunday. But yeah, I'll go 2-1 to City. But I'll take a draw, Dave. I would take a draw now if you offered it to me.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for $1. Because saving with deals is always on the menu with new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Rich from the Suffolk Crunch. Andy, the last time City went to Portman Road in a league game, they were relegated. Not many happy memories there. The last time City went at all, though, they did win 4-1 in the FA Cup. So it swings around about. I went the year before the relegation when they lost 1-0 with a deflection on a Richard Jobson effort. And I remember thinking, we've come all this way and this is the game that's happened. It's a long way to get there. And if you're going to go down on that day as well, oh, horrid.
Yeah, I know. I mean, to be honest with you, I think... I'm going on Sunday, but this will be my first time that I've gone to Portman Road. So I'm looking forward to that. But I think the problem with sort of looking that far back is we start assessing what's going to happen on Sunday compared to our record. But it's obviously different.
There's no relation, does it?
It doesn't, no. I mean, you can still have the grudge about the sign that was up on that day, of course.
I don't know about you. I've held a grudge against Ipswich for the period of about 1999 to 2001. And I've never let it go. And it's like, it's over 20 years ago now.
Yeah. I think we all have those. We all have those little ones. I think most of them come when we're younger. You know, we sort of get something that really upset us as a child and then, or a young person. And then we sort of like, you know, we carry them with us. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I get you. But yeah, it's a different game. I'm not really concerned about what's happened in the past, to be honest with you. You know, I think they look a good side. They've changed the way they play. They started off with a more expansive sort of style of football earlier on in the season, and it seems that they've now playing a little bit more within themselves, but a longer ball, which will be interesting. But also that'll suit them against us. They'll sit in a little bit more, so that's what I'm expecting. But I think it'll be a tough game. I definitely do. I don't, you know, like I said, I forget what's happened in the past, you know. But I think it'll be a tough game anyway. There's no bad sides in the Premier League. We all know that, don't we?
Yeah, so. Gary, they've beaten Ipswich just after Christmas, but they've beaten Chelsea, at Portman Road just after Christmas. But they've not had a particularly great home record this season. That said, there is the law of football that returning players always score, and Liam Delap's their top scorer. So any nerves about the big bustling striker? Well, City are feeling a bit vulnerable.
Of course we are. I mean, I wouldn't be a City fan if I didn't get nervous about that. We just know, don't we? And certainly he'll fancy it. He'll fancy it. Yeah, so yeah. It's one of those things. And, you know, for any team like Ipswich, and I'm certainly not somebody who looks down on any team or anything like that, but we know there's a big gulf between City and Ipswich at the moment. It hasn't always been, you know, we could go back 20 years before, 20 years ago, and you've got Bobby Robson's Ipswich team and all of that. But a team like Ipswich at the moment, I'd like to think they've got a much better chance than any other time against City, and they're going to go for it. And someone like Delap has got something to prove. Well, in his head, maybe. You know, he may think he's got something to prove. Yeah, I know. I think I have that other niggle that if we concede a goal, then all these other recent worries come in. Mm-hmm. So there's a bizarre thing in my head that says, do you know what? Actually, if we do have to concede a goal, and hopefully we don't have to concede a goal, but if we do have to concede a goal, perhaps we should concede the first goal. Concede the first goal, and then we can fight back.
But
like we said earlier, if you've got a lead and you lose a goal, the nerves set in. If you fight, if you're trying to get, you know, if you've conceded a goal in the first minute, you've got time. So if Delap has to score, let him score early on and give us a chance. Don't score an equaliser. Don't score later on. I think I need to lie down now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just don't fancy this one at all. But then speaking of games we don't fancy, they go away to PSG in the midweek, Andy. And they're an odd team this season because as much as they're struggling in the Champions League and they're below City in the Champions League table, they're absolutely flying in Ligue 1. So I don't know. I really don't know what to expect.
It appears from having sort of looked at it a little bit is that they had a really bad start to the season in the Champions League. I think they've won the last two. I think though, haven't they? They've picked up a bit.
Oh, good, excellent.
Or they got 4 points. Yeah. Or they got 4 points in the last two games, or something like that. But I think I think if you're playing poor, if that PSG team's playing poorly in Ligue 1, then you're gonna they're still gonna be okay there because they're basically by a long way the most well equipped team in that league. Financially, players-wise, squad size and everything else. So even if they're playing poorly, they're going to get results. So that's probably why they're still doing well in the league early on. But in themselves, they weren't playing very well up until recently. And I think they've started to play better now. They start to score more goals. So it'll be interesting. It won't be easy. I'd take a draw today because then we know that we probably with a win at home against Bruges we'll go through to the knockout stage. And it seems mad that we're even thinking that. We all thought we'd be in the top eight, didn't we? Let's be honest.
What happens if City lose this game and then don't qualify for the next phase of the Champions League? Is that a disaster, Andy, do you think?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think it is. I think we can count it as a disaster for us at the level we're at. I don't think there's any shame in that, really. It wouldn't have... It's not easy, really, to stun at that, if I'm being honest. I expected more, but I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, we can all look at the injuries and everything else, but even so, I think we would have all expected to get through to the knockout stage at the very, very, very least. So, yeah, it would be a bit of a disaster for us. I don't think there's any sort of painting over that, really.
Yeah. It's an argument, Gary, for this one to absolutely go for it, because you could probably say, if this one, winner goes through.
Yes.
The downside of that is obviously loser goes out. So,
yeah, loser goes out, and also you've got to look that the next two games for us are Chelsea and Arsenal. So, if we go all out for it, who knows what's going to happen physically to the players? I don't know. But yeah, maybe there's an argument to say that. I actually do have confidence that we're going to qualify. I do have confidence that. But bit more than that, I also feel that. Once we get to that knockout stage, it's more the sort of competition that we seem to be able to turn it on. So if we're playing a team like PSG, you know, a supposed modern-day giant of football, if you like, I do feel we have more of a chance of turning it on than we do against Ipswich. And perhaps I shouldn't say that. And, you know, when we talk about the score predictions, it says something different. But I do think that Europe still offers us our best chance, well, maybe the FA Cup, but best chance of something this year. I think if we get into that knockout stage, anything really is possible. And maybe, you know, maybe I'm just being far too confident in Europe than I should be, but it just has that feeling that it's more Pep sort of competition at the moment. So you never know.
Yeah, we'll see. No, we'll see how it goes. We'll get predictions shortly, but first let's find out more about PSG. I've been speaking to Ed from PSG Talk.
What's happening? Great question. So, you know, obviously we know in the summer Kylian Mbappe left. We know Neymar is gone. Messi is gone. So this kind of superstar Galactico, Hollywood FC, whatever you want to call it, era has been closed. And so now with Luis Enrique coming in as manager, this is his second full season that we're in. And we're sort of tinkering a little bit. We're trying to figure out who our best players are, who we want to bring in, who fits the best in Luis Enrique's system. And so that's been a lot of this early part of the season. This first half of the season has just been kind of moving players around, trying to figure out who can perform consistently and who can't. And if I had to say what the storyline for this season is, it would be the lack of goals. We kind of supporters joke it's post Saint Germain because we just keep hitting the post. We create the chances, we can get shots off, but we just can't score. We either shoot it right at the goalkeeper or we're hitting it off the crossbar or the post, whatever it might be, and we just are really struggling to score goals. I think in the Champions League we've been shut out twice on the road at Arsenal and Bayern Munich, both shut us out, and then at home at the Park, where traditionally PSG don't struggle to score goals, they are this season. I think we've only scored 3 total goals, and we're not playing juggernauts here. Girona, PSV. I mean, we're not playing these upper echelon teams, and we're still struggling to score. So in a nutshell, if I had to say what's going on, it's just really the lack of goals, but it's also because we're bringing in new players, and we just don't have that cohesion yet.
Yeah, how do you kind of fancy this game against City? Because you are at home, and I mean, obviously, you've talked about the record there, but you look at City's record this season, and yeah, they've won a few games recently, but they are really struggling to, again, create chances. They're struggling to stop chances going in at their end. So, does that give you kind of a little bit of hope, of optimism, of actually this could be the game where we do create, where we do score goals?
Absolutely, and I would say if this match was maybe before last month of December, I would say, my goodness, City are going to just steamroll us at home because we were really, really struggling. But I would say as of late, PSG have been scoring some goals. They've beaten Salzburg, which I know, again, isn't a top team, but it was on the road and they were able to score goals.
A win to win, right? We're all there this season.
We'll take it however we can get it. So they're creating these chances. Most recently, PSG, they defeated, say, Etienne. Again, lower league on team, so you're not going to put a whole lot into it. But Ousmane Dembele, who has really been struggling this season to score goals, he had a brace. And so we're starting to see the goals starting to come. In December, PSG had wins over Lyon, Lens, Monaco, which is doing very well in the Champions League, and again that win over Salzburg. So we're stringing together some wins. Some players that have been struggling are scoring goals. We've got Gonzalo Ramos. He was injured for much of the first half of the season with a pretty significant ankle injury. He's come back in. He had a streak where he was scoring goals. He had 4 games in a row, I think it was, where he scored. So the goals are picking up. And so when I'm looking at this game, I'm thinking, okay, City, I know you guys had a difficult result yesterday against Brentford. You know, your defense maybe is a little bit suspect. So if we get some players that are in form, the goals are starting to come. We're at home. Our backs up are against the wall. You kind of have to maybe give PSG a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here, that maybe they're the team that can finally, of the two teams struggling, maybe they're the ones to put it all together here.
Yeah, when you look at the Champions League table as well, I mean, City in 22nd in the just about in the qualification spots for the supplementary knockout phase. PSG a point behind in 25th. Do you think, is this a case of only one of these teams is going to get through if either of them do?
PSG and City, it's difficult because you're right. If there is a winner in this match and the other team gets 0 points, they really, even if they win the last game, I know PSG's got Stuttgart. Who does City play in the last?
City play Club Bruges.
Yeah, and Bruges are playing decently, so that's going to be a tough match. And Stuttgart away is not going to be easy as well. So I think that, yeah, I there's a very good chance that whoever loses this game will be on the outside looking in, and then, as you know, PSG and Manchester City, they're just lightning rods for the media. Whichever team doesn't move forward, it is going to be a painful rest of the season for whatever fan, supporters, because the media is just going to be relentless. You spend how much money, and you've got Erling Haaland, and you've got all these players at PSG, and Hakimi, and whoever, you know, and to not qualify for the Champions League. And then for PSG, it's even worse because, you know, you look at, you've got Lille and Brest and Monaco that are probably going to go through, and little old PSG probably not going to go through if they don't win this one.
Yeah. Who's in form right now? Who, like you mentioned kind of the problems that you've had, but who's getting you through it? Who's playing well?
Yeah, well, I just mentioned him. I would say Achraf Hakimi, PSG's right back. I would probably put him up there as probably a top five right back in the world. He's fantastic. He's just signed a new contract, so he's committed to the club till 2029. So it's great to have a player of his caliber want to stay. There's a lot of speculation. He's really good friends with Kylian Mbappe, who's at Real Madrid. Hakimi's got ties to Madrid, so we were kind of worried that he might go, but he's signed a new contract. And he's definitely been, if you want to say, the MVP, most valuable player for PSG so far. He can get forward. He can link up with Ousmane Dembele on that right side. They create chances. And he's also reliable defensively. He really hasn't put a foot wrong this season. So I would say he's probably our most in-form player. The worry is, I know we've got a couple matches before we get to the City game. PSG don't really have a suitable replacement for him at right back. So he's got to stay fit. He's got to stay healthy. If he goes down and is unavailable for that match against City, my goodness, PSG are going to be in a bad way because he really does it all for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereabouts are you struggling at the minute? Where's the team looking a bit weak?
Yeah. I would say, I'll say Gianluigi Donnarumma. He's in form at the moment. Ever since he took a boot to his face, I think it was last month, he's kind of stepped his game up. I don't know if you saw that, but he just, a cleat right to his cheek, and it was all chewed up on his face. And ever since that, sometimes it just takes getting kicked in the face to really get your form going.
So to really align those thoughts, doesn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. But he is a player who can very, very quickly fall out of form. It's why Luis Enrique has replaced him in the starting lineup at times, like he did against Bayern Munich. Safonov is our goalkeeper we signed last summer. So those two kind of been going back and forth. And so my worry with Donnarumma is that he can fall out of form quickly, and he is especially weak on set pieces. So a player like Erling Haaland, he can really have his way with PSG's defense. And Donnarumma, even though he's 6'5", you would think he's this big physical goalkeeper, he gets beat all the time on set pieces. And so I think, you know, Erling Haaland could probably beat Donnarumma to off a corner or a set piece. We saw Arsenal exploit PSG on set pieces. And so I think City would be wise to kind of look at that game plan from Arsenal and try to emulate it, because Donnarumma is just very, very poor in the air.
Yeah. What do you anticipate Luis Enrique will do tactically for this one? Because, I mean, obviously, when City and PSG come to town normally, the other team, they're facing a low block, you know, the teams sit deep. City and PSG don't tend to do that anyway. But while both are feeling a bit vulnerable, is there a tendency to kind of try and protect what you've got as well? I mean, I look at what Guardiola's trying to do with City, and, you know, there's obviously, you know, holes that he needs to try and plug up, but like the gaps are always still there. Could this be an end-to-end game, or could this be a game where two teams are trying to be a bit conservative? I don't know.
It is interesting. We talked about earlier, you know, if there is a loser, someone gets 0 points out of this match, it really is, could be the death nail. And so there is that worry that, okay, are they going to maybe try to play for a 0-0 or a 1-1 and kind of be a little bit of a cagey, just kind of match, not really back and forth? You're at home. If you're PSG and you're at home, you see City, they're vulnerable. They're a little bit weakened, I think, at this moment. If there ever was a game to come out and show what you've got and take the game by the scruff of its neck, I think it's this game. And so I hope that Luis Enrique will instruct his team to really go for this one. They've got the players to get it done. Tactically, unfortunately, I think we're probably going to see some kind of false nine. I've mentioned Gonzalo Ramos in the goal-scoring run that he's on, but for some reason, Luis Enrique just doesn't like a traditional striker. He loves playing with that false nine. It's why we're seeing Randall Colomwani likely on his way out to Juventus. It's why, you know, Kvaratskhelia is a player that's coming in, but he's another winger. He won't be available for this match against City, but it really seems like Luis Enrique prefers to have these wingers and then a false nine. So I think that's probably what we're going to get. I think you'll have Dembele up front. I'm thinking maybe Barkla. And then in the middle, it could be Desiree Doué, one of our new exciting signings from last summer, maybe in the middle there. And so I think he's going to put these attack-minded players. He's probably going to have Hakimi going up and down the right flank, trying to join the attack, whipping crosses. And so it's all going to be about getting forward. Can they score goals? And so it's going to be João Neves, Vitinha, Warren Zaire-Emery in the midfield. Can they keep possession? Can they not get overrun by Manchester City? We've got a great defender in William Pacho, who came in last summer. Just was a revelation, just came in, and we weren't really expecting a whole lot from him, but from day one, he's been solid in defense. And so, given Donnarumma's weakness at the back, I would love to see PSG maintain possession, get forward, put City on their heels a little bit. And if you and what we've seen this season, if PSG can get a goal early on, their confidence, it's just night and day how their confidence improves. And so it's really going to be for them all about, can we get that early goal at home, get the crowd behind us, and maybe strike a little fear in City. I hope that's what Luis Enrique's game plan is.
Yeah. Final question then, Ed. We had the charity bet coming up a bit later on. I like to give my score prediction over to the guests. So money where your mouth is. What are you going to go for in this game? How will it go, and what's your score prediction?
I'm going to go. I mean, you got to go for it. It's my team. I'm going to say 2-1 to PSG. I have to believe. It really comes down to this game. We've got to get it done. I'll take a 1-1 draw, but I'd love to get a win. And I think the two goals, if I had to pick, maybe Bradley Barcola, and we'll go with Hakimi, PSG's best player, getting the two goals for us.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
That was Ed from PSG Talk. Charity bet time now. We've had no winners on the last few shows, so we're still on £715 for the season so far. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. We will start with that trip to Portman Road. Rich went for a 2-1 Ipswich defeat, so a 2-1 City win. That's 7-1 and £70 if he's right. Andy, what are you having for this one?
Well, I think Rich stole my scoreline, actually. I thought I was going for 2-1. I can't see us not conceding something. So I'll go 2-0 and hope that we can keep a clean sheet.
In the unlikely event that they do keep a clean sheet and win 2-0, that's also 7-1 and £70. Gary, you wanted 2-1 as well, which I think says a lot about this game. So what did you go for in the end?
Well, I've gone the other way and said 3-1 now. So I think we will concede, but... we'll score 3 now.
Yeah, 3-1 is 10-1 and £100 if you're right. That takes us to PSG. We heard Ed go for a 2-1 PSG win. That is 9-1 and £90. Gary, kick us off. What are you having for the trip to France?
A 1-1 draw. Despite what I said earlier, I do think it's going to be a tough one. And I think 1-1. I think we'll score, but yeah.
Yeah, I think we'd all take... I think at some point we've all said that we would take a draw on this show. So, yeah, I understand that entirely. 6-1 and £60 if you're right. Andy, over to you.
2-2. So, again, draw. But, again, I can't see he's not conceding. So, Gary's had the 1-1, so I'll go 2-2.
2-2 it is. 11-1 and £110 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now then, it is time for the listener questions. Andy, I'm going to let you do the honours. We've got 3 jingles from Higgy. Pick a number, 1, 2, or 3.
I'll go 2, please. The number I used to wore.
Number 2, here we go.
The listener's questions. It's the listener's questions bit, so please make sure that yours ain't shit, because Mooney won't put up with it. It's the listener's questions. The listener's questions. Ah, thank you.
What I love about that bit is now that we can all see each other's faces as we record, the complete bafflement on any guest's faces is just like when they hear what Higgy's come up with, just fantastic. Get in touch on Twitter on Blue Sky at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com as well. We have a massively packed show today, so I've left some questions for next week. We're going to finish with Sam from Blue Sky, who says, I've got into the traitors again this year, so who is the biggest traitor to Manchester City in the club's history and why? Gary, who has betrayed City the most?
I'm thinking about the Traitors TV show. I shouldn't really say this because it's a fairly recent player, I suppose, but Daniel Sturridge. Should I tell you why? I know, but should I tell you why? Jim Cassell told me a story from years ago, actually, but when Sturridge was a young player with City, they went down to Chelsea for something. And it was the first time he was ever supposed to have been there, but Sturridge knew his way around the the training facility and all that, as far as Jim was concerned. I wasn't there. I don't know if that's true, but that sort of fits in with the sort of traitor's theme.
Yeah, the story. I was thinking, so like when this question came in, Andy, my gut reaction, I don't know if this, I don't know if this says something about my age, but my gut reaction was Tony Coton.
Oh, you're going to give me bad memories now. I put something in the City programme about Tony Coton choosing first team security at City for life on the bench at United. Mm. The publisher phoned me up the week after saying Tony Coton wants to speak to you. And basically he didn't. It was that was the story that City put out at the time. There's much more to it, but basically Alan Ball, I think it was Alan Ball, but City wanted him out. I think I did call him a traitor, and that's why I won't call him that again.
Tony, if you're listening, apologies. I'm totally wrong on that one. Andy, who are you going for?
I could have gone for Jeff Thomas, but I'll forgive him for all his great charity work he's done, for him talking about, he was a City fan, Jeff Thomas, played for Palace, said he'd walk up the M6 on broken glass to join us. Unfortunately, he stopped off at Wolves because they offered him more money, which is fair enough. But I think the one that most of my age go with is Howard Kendall. Mm. You know, he came to us as manager. I think he came back from Spain. He's been a great manager for Everton, won trophies. Came back to us and he only stayed 11 months, but I think we'd won 11 on the trot when he got hooked off back to Everton again. And he called Everton his wife and us his girl, his
mistress.
Like, mistress, that's right, yeah. And I've got to say that was an awful feeling back then. And I don't think, me and most of my mates around are my age, and nobody's ever forgiven him for that because we knew how good he was. I think that was the thing. It hurt. We knew how good he was. He was an unbelievably good manager. And we was getting somewhere. We were really getting somewhere. And after all the years, you know, because we're talking late 80s, so, you know, the 80s have been a tough time for City fans. And we actually thought, okay, this is the time. This is when we're going to step back again. And then Everton came calling and, and he didn't even work out for him then either, did it, Gary, from what I remember? I don't think he did
never,
well there.
Never go back.
Go back. Yeah, well, I mean, I said that about Gundo as well, by the way, this year.
there's a similar theme as well with Billy McNeil when he went to Aston Villa. I know he'd never been to Aston Villa before, but when Billy McNeil left City to go to Aston Villa, I felt exactly the same as when Howard Kendall left City and went to Everton, because you felt we were going to do something. It was going to happen. And then it's taken from you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if we've missed your choice of who the biggest City traitor is, do get in touch at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter and Blue Sky. You can send in questions as well, contact@bluemoonpodcast.com. And that's it for this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks also to my guests for this one, Gary James.
Thanks for having us.
And Andy McNabb.
Thanks, David. Thank you.
This week's Nostalgia episode was a countdown of the top 10 false dawns at City. There's a clip of that coming up shortly, and you can listen to the full thing by joining our Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast for more details. I'll be back next week after the games with Ipswich and PSG. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
He had the measure of Diego Costa the whole game. And all of a sudden, you just looked at our centre-back pairing and thought, he's going to be a stalwart at the heart of our defence. And literally, the dawn lasted a week. until the next game against Hull.
Didn't he score an own goal and then give a penalty away?
Yeah.
One extreme to the other. It wasn't like he just sort of had a string of average performances. It was just like, this guy just doesn't have a brain. Like, the fall from grace is extreme. When you were introducing this one, Mooney, I remembered as well, I think it was at Old Trafford, when he went to warm up and he had the blue Santa hat on as well.
And Guardiola snatched it off his head, yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, I mean, what was he even still doing at the club when Guardiola was there? Like,
He made 15 appearances for City in that 17-18 Centurions season. Nine of them in the league. Now, obviously coming off the bench most times, but he made 9 appearances in that Centurions team, yeah.
He won himself a WWE Championship belt at the end of the season, if you remember.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.